And I want you.
No, it's like.
I'm glad this may be my.
City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams.
Adams.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Potter.
Here. I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to the City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they are authorized to represent. At this point, we're going to elect the next council president. And Commissioner Dan Saltzman is in the lineup. So can I have a motion to, and a second?
Moved.
Second.
Please call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Which one of those is the president of the council one?
Not that one. That one.
There we go.
Sam, thank you for your
service.
Here
you go, Sam.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service, yes.
Ira, thank you. That was sincere.
Okay, let's start communications. Please read the first communication.
Item 913, request of Robert Barrett to address council regarding sit-lay camping ordinances.
You read the name again?
Robert Barrett.
Please read the next.
Item 914, request of Wesley Flowers to address council regarding the 10-year plan and alternative shelter.
Thank you for being here. When you speak, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Yes, sir. My name is Wesley Flowers. I appreciate this 3 minutes. The 10-year plan and the sheltering program in the city of Portland, the sheltering program in particular, is just simply abysmal. There is not enough beds. There have not ever been enough beds. And to be honest with you, I had a nice speech prepared for today, but 2 days ago, the Portland Police Department decided they can't even follow their own laws when they steal my house, which included the notes that was the meat and potatoes of this speech. So while the 10-year plan ticks forward with a 43% attrition rate, which is horrible, 43% of the people that end up in the 10-year program are back out on the streets in 12 months, to be subject to this. This isn't even filled out. All this says is stay out of this area or be arrested. This is an infantile grade school playground threat. This is not in accordance with the law. This is the crux of the protest. This is our problem. These laws are on the books. These laws are sweeping people out of downtown. They're sweeping them out of Portland into other cities, which is one of the most civically irresponsible things that a city can do. If you have homeless people in this city, don't sweep them to other cities for them to deal with them. Deal with the problem here. Develop programs that will empower people to help them get off the streets. There are programs that have been submitted. There are programs that are on the desks of council members here that, if implemented, could give people the hand up that they need to get themselves into an independent lifestyle rather than the continuation of dependence on a system that depends on them for its very existence. If you work to get people into housing with apartments in their name, leases in their name, no longer in your system, no longer in your computers, no longer drawing off of taxpayer dollars, no longer crammed into warehoused single residence occupancy hotels with bed bugs and social conditions that will only have them out on the streets within the next 2 years, or have them sheltered away in their SRO, living a completely unfulfilled life. This is not right. This isn't the way that America is supposed to be. This isn't the way that human beings should be treated. We need to work together to develop programs that are going to get people off the streets and keep them off the streets and get them out of a system and get them on their own two feet, not with somebody's hand holding them, somebody holding their hand as they cross the street every single day of their life. That's all I have to say.
Mr. Barrett, did you say the police did not follow the procedure set out in the camping ordinance itself?
It says here.
Asking you if that's what you're saying.
That is exactly what I'm saying.
Could you give that document, and we'll make a copy of it to the council clerk?
Yes, sir.
And I will follow up, and I see you've got an email address, and we'll have folks contact you and investigate that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Please read the next name.
Item 915, request of Carl Cromie to address council regarding non-response of written communications.
Please state your name when you speak, and you have 3 minutes.
My name is Carl Cromie. I'm a resident of Portland, Oregon. This is not my first time before the council. And by the way, welcome, new president. Last time I was here, the president asked one of the commissioners if he'd fulfilled the obligation of the documents that were requested, and at which time Randy Leonards lied to him. I still haven't received those documents from the Water Department, Randy. And by the way, next month will be our 2-year anniversary of August 5th, when you committed assault and battery, and the DA refused to prosecute you. Well, the Portland Tribune's got your name. Now, I'm still waiting for some documents from the Water Department. It's been almost 24 months. What do you have to say?
You're here to make a statement, sir. We're not going to respond.
I did make a statement.
We're not going to respond.
The last time I was here, you asked Leonards, did you get him this information? And Leonards told you on the record, yes, I did. But no, he didn't. So he lied to you. What consequences do you have for him for lying to you? Thank you.
Please call the next name.
916, request of Shedrick J. Wilkins to address council regarding the importance of community college and health care for children. Mr. Wilkins called. He's not able to make it.
Okay, please read the next.
917, request of Andrew Seaton to address council regarding the criminalization and denial of freedom of speech.
Please state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes.
Good morning. My name is Andy Seaton, resident of Portland. So I want to welcome Nick Fish to the council, as I was going to do before I was rudely interrupted several weeks ago.
Thank you.
And also want to congratulate Dan Saltzman on his being elected president of council, although it seemed like you were just on the rotation, next man up, which may or may not be a good thing. And to answer Nick Fish's question that he asked several weeks ago about the data on hard drives that are for computers that are recycled to Free Geek. I am a longtime volunteer at Free Geek. I have taught classes at Free Geek. I have been part of the adoption program and the build program, which uses the recycled computers. Computers that are being reused have the hard drive reformatted in a new format. So the data is very effectively erased, and the hard drives that are being recycled are disassembled and eventually crushed, destroying the data. But you know, anything that one man can do, another man can undo in the data, unless it's physically wiped by the folks here before it leaves the door. It won't be physically wiped once it gets to Free Geek, but it'll be very hard to get to. And I'd also like to comment about the mayor's banning me from testifying before city council. Turns out I can only do that once a month now, because you can only sign up to be on the on this section of the agenda once every calendar month, and the next available slot happened to be this one. So this was my next opportunity to speak to you folks. And if this isn't reversed, I will be suing the city council for violating of my civil rights. And I've already talked to several attorneys on the matter, including including Stephen Sherlag, who represented me last time I sued the city, and I won $10,000. So, you know, I'm happily unemployed, and the $10,000 would always help. So continue to go along at this level. And I would like to point out that that also banning me from objecting to items on the consent agenda is in violation of your rules. You folks mentioned that I'm supposed to. Oh, yeah. I gave a copy of the rules and agenda. It turns out the consent agenda rules are actually in the charter, not just in the city code. And in section 3.2.40.I.8, it says that rules of the charter of this chapter also appear in the charter cannot be suspended or rescinded. And in another section, it says without a vote of the people, not just a vote of the council. So you guys made a bit of a mistake by putting it in the charter and not just in this, in the rules, because you, if it's in the city code, you can just amend it as you got on the fly. And I'd also like to raise an objection today to item number 918 on the consent agenda. I'd like to talk to it. There are several drafting errors and other items, which means it shouldn't be on the consent agenda at all. Thank you.
I assume the very document you passed out to us, you've read as well. I assume that the document you passed out with the rules regarding the city council meetings that you read as well.
Yes, I read it.
And did you read the section that said that the presiding officer shall determine whether public testimony shall be received and the amount of time which shall be allotted to each person? That is the presiding officer, which happens to be the mayor, or in my absence, the president of the council. So I have the authority to do that. It is a privilege, not a right, in order to testify before the city council.
Well, my question under equal protection of the law is whether or not the amount of time that is given to other members of the public to speak would also apply to me. Otherwise, you would be singling me out. And I'm trying to do a very friendly, non-violent, peaceful protest of a manner. But actually, I do my best to stay on topic and to draw you guys into the larger implications. And I can go over and grab a copy of my Robert's Rules of Order if you'd like to discuss you know, what it means to be germane. And one of the other interesting little items was that let's see here, in section
Your time is up.
Well, this is answering your question.
Well, you've answered it. Thank you.
The fun thing is that you folks are required to stay on topic, but members of the public aren't. So, according to your own rules and regulations. So I'll be talking again in a moment, I suspect. If not, you'll be hearing from my attorney.
That's all the communications.
Okay. Consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
Well, Commissioner Saltzman, were you?
Oh. I thought, yes, we wanted to pull item 929.
I think it was 928, 29, 30, and 31. So is the note I have. I don't know if that's right.
Yes, I guess it would be all four of those.
Okay. So 9...
28, 29, 30, and 31.
Okay.
Which is actually at the request of members of the CRC.
Yes, we have. Yeah, exactly. Our IPR, Citizen Review Committee, has requested those items be pulled, and I see several of them are here to testify on this.
Does any member of this audience wish to pull an item from the consent agenda? And what is the purpose of that?
There's several problems with this. It shouldn't have been on the consent agenda to begin with because it does expand the budget of an existing item. And it says it's part of the section B of the therefore. Says it's a city code, chapter 5.68, and it's actually that's part of the charter. And if you're trying to waive the charter again, which you can't do, on the part of the city council.
Has the city attorney looked at that, and have they determined whether that's legal on the part of the city to do that?
Yes.
And you said it's legal?
Yeah.
Tracy, could you grab your microphone? Thank you. It's on. Yeah, thanks.
This was actually drafted by our office, Mr. Mayor, and it's been reviewed by our office.
Okay, I would suggest you take the matter up with the city attorney's office. Let's go to the four items mentioned, 928, 929, 930, and 931.
I think we have to vote on the consent agenda first.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Please read the four ordinances, 928, 29, 30, and 31.
928, authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and the City of Hillsboro for transit police services. 929, authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and Washington County for transit police services. 930, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and the City of Tigard for transit police services. 931, amend an intergovernmental agreement with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and the City of Beaverton for transit police services.
Kate, who did you wish to speak to this matter?
I believe we have, well, I see three members of the Independent Police Review Citizen Review Committee. So,
okay, could you folks please come forward? When you speak, would you state your name for the record, please?
My name is Mike Bigham, and I'm chairperson of the Citizens Review Committee. Mr. Mayor and members of the council, we would like to thank you for taking time to hear our comments. We are here to ask for some revisions to the TriMet intergovernmental agreement regarding police services. Let me give you some background. About a year and a half ago, the CRC heard an appeal from a young man involved in an altercation with a Portland police officer at the 82nd Avenue MAX station. The officer was a member of the TriMet Division Task Force, which is made up of officers and deputies from the Portland Police Bureau and neighboring police and sheriff's departments. During our review of the case, we learned that an officer from one of the other jurisdictions who witnessed the altercation was not allowed by his department to be interviewed by Portland's Internal Affairs Department Division. Without that officer's testimony, we felt that the IA division's investigation was lacking. As a result of the case, Hank Miggins, on my left here, reviewed the intergovernmental agreements between Portland and the other agencies regarding policing of the TriMet system. Several policy issues arose out of his review concerning the accountability of outside officers to the citizens of the city of Portland. We contacted the police bureau, Commander Vince Jarmer. Commander Jarmer worked with us to resolve most of our concerns. He was very helpful, but except for one central issue, which was basically beyond his purview. And that issue was, are officers from other jurisdictions required to participate in Portland Police Bureau internal affairs investigations that relate to their involvement in incidents occurring within the city of Portland and while working within their duties with the TriMet division? In short, the answer is no. Officers may volunteer to be interviewed by internal affairs, and they are required to write a police report, but unlike Portland officers, they cannot be compelled to provide testimony. This greatly hampers Portland's internal affairs division in their investigations. Hypothetically, a high-profile incident involving officers of the TriMet division, such as an officer-involved shooting or a death in custody, may not be fully investigated because the department head of another agency may not allow his or her personnel to be interviewed about the incident. This does not serve well the interests of the citizens of our city, and we would ask that the intergovernmental agreements be renegotiated to compel testimony of officers from an outside jurisdiction. Thank you.
Can I ask you a question? Do you have also situations where, for instance, the state police take an action inside the city. There's a complaint filed, but because they're the state police, we cannot compel testimony from them as well, or can we?
I'm not aware of that. I think it's possible, but if the state police are working under their own jurisdiction, then that would be referred to their internal affairs. If it's a task force situation, and I'm not sure whether the state police participate in a task force anymore, then it would be the Portland's responsibility to investigate the matter, but they may not be compelled to testify.
You know, there are a number of task forces, I'm sure you're aware,
right,
that the FBI have on child pornography on the internet.
Certainly.
They also have, we have ROCKIN, which is a regional organized crime, which right. is on drugs, and we have officers from various departments on that as well.
Right.
Are you saying that all of those would then fall under or should be renegotiated then?
Sir, my name is Hank Biggins,
yes.
and I'd like to point out that this issue that we are dealing with strictly deals with police officers who are assigned to patrol as part of the city of Portland's on the transit system. And not, we didn't look into the federal or the task force. This one was based upon the intergovernmental agreements that we now operate under.
But I'm saying that the same intergovernmental agreements apply to like ROCKIN, for instance, which is headed traditionally by a Portland police captain. And should it also be applied to those as well?
I didn't analyze those. I could do that, though.
I do believe that the same problem exists in those, basically. Without reviewing those IGAs, I would assume that the same problem exists with all those other agreements.
So is it reciprocal if we have a Portland police officer, for an example, that is involved in some kind of an incident in Gresham or Beaverton or Hillsborough, and there's a similar complaint in one of those locales about that interaction, do they testify to their local jurisdictions?
What would happen is that jurisdiction would take the lead in the internal affairs investigation. Basically, the same rules would apply. The Portland could prevent one of their officers from being interviewed.
Are you Portland, but is it also a union issue here? Are you aware of any union issues?
We didn't actually look into that. I don't know whether there are or not, to be honest with you.
My name is Lauren Erickson, and basically, again, this came out of a complaint filed by a citizen. So,
yeah. So I'm curious, what was the jurisdiction that that officer was working under?
Beaverton. Milwaukee.
Yeah. So in that case, did they have their own internal procedures in Milwaukee? Do we know?
They do if the incident occurs in Milwaukee. If the incident occurs in Portland, then it's Portland procedures that apply.
And is that their official position?
We didn't talk to them.
Because I'm just wondering if...
I guess that's what the IGA says.
Okay. I'm just wondering if there's an opportunity, because I agree with your concern that that's a gray area that certainly we need to be able to find some resolution to when there's a dispute. But I wonder if it'd be worth our while to have discussions with those jurisdictions for those circumstances where an officer from an outside jurisdiction has some kind of an incident here, and vice versa. If we have one with one mm-hmm. of our officers there, if we can't have some agreement that they develop some process specific to their jurisdiction to resolve that. Would that be acceptable to you if we were able to do that?
Yeah, I think that would be
nice start.
There may be some union issues too. In terms of IAD investigate is initiated, there are certain union requirements that come in.
Understood. But what I'm saying is every department has some procedure to filter complaints, and maybe the resolution to this gray area is to identify what jurisdiction that officer is from and then use whatever their processes are, which probably already reflect union concerns in their processes. So,
I think, I'm sure they do. The issue for me, though, is it's much larger than that, just the TriMet issue.
Yes.
Is that mm-hmm. we have a number of interagency agreements with a number of police agencies
right.
that actually are operated by the City of Portland, like TriMet is.
Yes.
And so we probably should look at all of them, because all of these agencies will have multiple agreements between each other and the City of Portland.
I think what I'm saying, really, if it's not in place, probably should be in place. So if you have an Oregon State trooper, for an example, assigned to a Portland task force, and there's a problem with that trooper, I suppose I do understand why they would want to use their own procedures at the Oregon State Police, but I don't know why it would be a problem for us then to have that complaint filed with them and use whatever that process is they've established, because they certainly have to have a process and for citizen complaints in each jurisdiction, but more that we just kind of develop that as if you have a complaint and it involves some action in the City of Portland, but it's an officer from another jurisdiction, here's their process, and you use that process.
And I think possible solution, too, may be that the, I know, like, on an officer-involved shooting, it's involved by the East County
Metro Task Force.
Yeah. Is maybe have a cooperative internal affairs investigation if it involves outside officers, headed by the agency that the incident occurs in. I don't know. It's just a thought.
We have a person from the police bureau that could address some of these issues.
That'd be great.
Commander Dreimer, excuse me.
I'd like to state that we addressed this issue through the police bureau, and they did a great job of trying to help us solve this issue. And we want to bring this matter to the attention of the council, because they weren't able to solve it within their own powers.
Commander Germer. Please state your name and also the area of assignment that you work.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My name is Vince Germer. I've been a police officer here for nearly 24 years, and I'm currently assigned at the Transit Police Division. I want to address some of the questions that the council has raised, and by first recognizing the people behind me that have just spoken, and they were gracious enough to have me come in and try to address these issues. The issue started before I was assigned there. In January of 08 is when I first got there, and so this issue came to me to resolve. In answer to your question and possibly Commissioner Leonard's question, there are some collective bargaining agreement issues here that will be involved if we were to go down this road. We in Portland, through the PPA, the Portland Police Association Agreement, have a very specific and detailed way of doing business with internal affairs. Other agencies are not as specific. They do have procedures, they do have processes, but they don't have the same comprehensive overview of how these protections are maintained. Their issue about the IGA is correct. We cannot compel outside agency officers to be involved in our internal affairs process. However, it is my knowledge that we have had co-investigations where we have asked the outside agency to commence, concurrent with what we're doing, their own investigation, and thereby compel their own officer to answer questions about a particular incident. We've had it where officers and deputies have voluntarily been involved, which we don't prevent. It's my knowledge that they have come to internal affairs and been part of an internal affairs investigation process, bringing, in one case, their city attorney, and in another case, and maybe that's county attorney, but I don't recall, and in another case, their union representative. So we do have more cooperation than less cooperation, if that makes any sense, with our outside agency officers. During this time period, what we and the committee have tried to, we put together a few things that have tried to address the concerns and kind of shore up some of the gray area that Commissioner Leonard was talking about. Some of the things that we do so that you know, when we're selecting outside agency officers, we, somebody from my command staff or myself, are personally involved in the selection process. So an internal posting goes out at the agency. We come out and we are part of the process to select the officer, so we can kind of have the input into the kind of person that we're going to be getting. We redeveloped an acknowledgement form that all outside agency officers sign when they're first assigned to the Transit Police Division. And it went from a handful of directives and chief's memos and things like that to 2 pages full of specific directives, specific chief's memos, use of, including use of force, driving responses, a myriad number of things, less lethal issues. It's very comprehensive now. It's 2 pages. And what the acknowledgement form says is, I have read these things. I have understood these things. I've had an opportunity to ask questions about them if I didn't, and I agree to abide by them. And then there's a signature and a date on it. The as another measure of accountability, we have also had we developed an SOP within the Transit Police Division. The IGA specifically refers to any outside agency officer that comes to the division has to abide by division SOPs. In the SOP, which didn't exist before this process with the CRC and I, it actually had a formative stage. But in any event, the officers are required to write a police report about an incident. Now, we can require them to do that about an incident that comes to our attention that needs to be delineated. So, in essence,
did that happen in this case, in this particular incident?
No, I don't believe it did. And I'm not exactly sure what this instance was that they're referring to. And yes, it is true that we've had people not cooperate with the internal affairs process.
People meaning officers?
Yes, outside agency officers.
Does that strike you as unusual? I mean, I'm assuming our transit police that are Portland police officers that might be involved in some kind of an incident in Beaverton that may raise concerns for you as their commander. You might have concerns if the Beaverton police chief ordered them to appear before his own internal review process. I would suspect you might have some issues with that.
Well, I would. I think there's a perception out there that from chiefs and sheriffs that would possibly, they would think that we were trying to discipline their officers, which, of course, as a city of Portland, we can't do. It's up
to
the chief.
I mean, if we thought about this in the reverse.
But the reciprocity issue, we don't gain as much here in the city for our being involved in the Beaverton process. And by that, I mean, if a complaint were to come up against a Portland police officer in Beaverton, and it'd be a matter of a Beaverton case being investigated, we're very, very likely to open our own case here.
Which is my point. In this instance, wouldn't that other agency have been likely to open a case based on that complaint, even though it happened in Portland, in their agency, in your experience? I mean, they wouldn't just say, well, it happened in another city, we don't care, but it's our officer, you can't talk to them. They'd probably have their own internal process.
It's likely that they would take it as serious as we would take it, but I have to tell you that it is their option to follow their own procedures about how they accept complaints and how they don't.
But that's true for us as well. I mean, we're not going to allow another agency to determine whether or not our officers are disciplined. We'll do that ourselves. I mean, certainly we've had incidents of Portland police officers involved in incidents in other jurisdictions which have raised concerns that we've followed up on, but we wouldn't allow them to follow up as an internal affairs matter.
My recollection of those incidents is either we, the Portland Police Bureau, took the case ourselves and created our own investigation, started from ground zero, investigating the conduct, or we cooperated fully with the outside agency. So in reciprocity, we don't gain as much as that because we're very likely through IPR to take complaints.
Go ahead.
Well, so I guess what I'm hearing is that for us to unilaterally amend these agreements is probably going to cause some issues both with the unions and also the other jurisdictions. I mean, I guess we can discuss it with them, but if we were to unilaterally amend these agreements today,
I would recommend that. Against that. But I think the point you're getting to, Commissioner Leonard, in terms of having responsibility of the city with the officer involved to conduct their own investigation, make that part of an agreement.
I like that approach, that if we had in the agreement that each agency has to agree to have a complaint process if within their agency, if one of their officers is accused of misconduct in our jurisdiction. They have to agree to have a process by which our citizen can go to their agency and file a complaint and have whatever process it is they have.
What you have before you, item 928, is actually the only new IGA. We have not had an IGA with Hillsborough before now. The other three IGAs are existing IGAs that were up for review in 2010, regardless. These are, the Hillsborough one is new. The other ones are amendments to recognize basically only two things. One is the West Side project that's a pilot project between the city and Hillsborough, Beaverton, Washington County. That's one of the changes that's in there. The other change is the Exhibit 3, which is the very last page, I believe, which is a letter, a format of a letter that I can use as the commander and deal specifically with the chief of police or the sheriff of the county to make personnel changes, add or subtract people without going through the entire IGA process again. So we just have the letter. So essentially, 29, 30, and 31 only deal with the amendment.
Right.
And those two issues.
And I will tell you, Vince, that the entire community is very appreciative of this collaboration and work because of all the problems on TriMet. But because of that, we can look forward to more incidents and we can look forward to more complaints. So I don't think it's unreasonable to think about maybe taking these and asking, assuming the mayor is okay with this, to amend these. And I can't imagine the jurisdiction be opposed to it, that if we have a complaint in Portland involving one of their officers, that they agree to have some kind of a process where we would refer the citizen to that agency to follow up on that complaint. And would you think that would be a problem to have something like that in these agreements?
I'm not sure if it would be a problem or not. Formalizing what it is that you just said would be an avenue. What actually occurs right now is something similar to that, although there's no formal agreement about it. And in actuality, I did some review of the complaints that have recently occurred, and we've taken a dramatic nosedive in the number of complaints at Transit Police Division, which kudos to them for that. So addressing this issue now could have collateral effects with cooperation levels with the chiefs and sheriffs of the counties. I don't know that. I'm just.
I would. I guess I just have to intuitively anticipate that if you went to them and said, "We've had an issue from our own citizen internal reviews folks, and we just want to be assured that we can tell people when they come to us that you have a process that people can come and complain." I can't imagine anybody saying, "Well, yeah, we have one. No problem. Let's put that in there."
I would. I'd be willing to take that on and also engage the city attorney's office.
Yeah.
Due to discussion, I don't know what's out there in terms of union agreements, but it seems like this kind of keeps that a separate issue because what we're saying is that they would initiate at the same time we initiate an investigation.
Mayor, may I ask a question?
Yes.
It's a very interesting discussion. And I just want to make sure I understand something. So a citizen who is on a TriMet, Max, who has an incident and finds out that the officer involved is from another jurisdiction, would then have an opportunity to pursue process with that other jurisdiction. Okay, so it turns out it's a Washington County officer, and so you go through that process, and you're not satisfied with the outcome. And we have an IGA that where we're, in essence, agreeing to have these officers enforce the law in our jurisdiction. So if you're not satisfied with what happened, is there some further recourse to us because we're party to an IGA and have authorized this officer to enforce the law within our boundaries?
I mean, every officer is certified to be an officer in the entire state of Oregon, so literally any cop from Portland can be involved in an incident anywhere in the state on or off duty. And I think the way we've always handled that is we deal with those ramifications here. And I don't think we should expect any more of another jurisdiction that if they have an incident involving their officer in our jurisdiction, we have to rely on their training and certifications at the state that they'll do what the law requires. And I think you just refer them to that agency.
And it would really get, I think, dicey, Commissioner, if that agency, for instance, has a different
procedure, which I'm fairly positive that most of them have their own way of conducting internal affairs investigations. But they probably all have union agreements that go with that as to what the agency will or will not do. The approach that Commissioner Leonard and I think that I could certainly support would be to ask them to initiate at the same time their own procedure and leave that up to them as to the determination of that procedure. If we get into requiring them to do it in a certain way, then we're going to. There's a whole set of union issues, I believe, and perhaps even their own ordinances and statutes that would perhaps come into play. This seems like a cleaner way to do it, and I think it addresses the issue that the IPR is concerned that some of these folks may or may not be accountable. At least they have to be accountable to their own agency and in their own procedures. Is that sufficient?
That sounds perfect.
And I understand.
Does that sound good to you? Does that sound like a good approach?
It sounds like an approach. And without being any more facetious like I generally am, the concern that I'll raise here is if for whatever reason they don't agree or they don't want to do that or they don't want to implement some sort of process, which I can't really think of a reason why they wouldn't either. If they were to pull out of the IGA, the city of Portland doesn't have enough officers to fill in these spots. And
I get that, but I can't. I mean, every agency has to have a process for handling complaints, and all we're basically saying is allow us to put in there, just formalize that you have one, and then we'll refer the citizen to you. I mean, that's all we're saying. Nothing, and we're not going to oversee it, or if we're not satisfied with the outcome, we're not going to second guess it. We're not saying any of that, just to assure our folks that are citizens pursuing complaints that when something happens in Portland, they can refer them to an agency that has their own process to handle those complaints.
It sounded like from your own comments, Commander, that's done informally in many instances now.
Yes.
What we're suggesting is by formalizing it, it's a more consistent approach, that each time something comes up, then there's a certain procedure and way to handle it, and that the local jurisdiction can handle it in their normal manner. It's just that the agreement is that they would initiate that procedure or process. So, but anyway, we can look at the legal issues and have the city attorney, and we'll get a group together, and if commissioner's offices wish to be represented, we can have folks from that as well. But I'd like to try to keep it as tight as possible so that we get down to the core issue here, which is to amend the agreement to that degree in a subsequent council hearing. Does this did this agreement expire, or is it going to expire soon if not approved today?
The Hillsborough one does not exist now, and that's I don't know how they would. That we already have Hillsborough officers working, so I don't know how that's going to work. The other ones expire in 2010, the other three.
Okay. These are emergency ordinances is why I'm asking. Any problem with proceeding with the emergency ordinance?
No, I think we could. I mean, you're amending the other ones that exist now anyway, so we could. I'm sure they would understand the concern, and we could amend them again.
Okay.
They're all at a certain level of process now, every single one of them. And if we amend them, then we'll have to send them back to the city councils for their and the county councils for their approval again.
Okay. Further discussion?
Great. Thank you.
These are emergency ordinances, so we'll have to read them one at a time and call a vote.
Did you want to take public testimony if anyone's here?
Is there anybody who wishes to discuss this issue? Please go ahead and proceed.
928, authorize an intergovernmental agreement between Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and the City of Hillsborough for the Transit Police Services.
A vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
I just want to thank the members of the Citizen Review Committee for bringing these issues forward. Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read 929.
Authorize an intergovernmental agreement with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and Washington County for Transit Police Services.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read 930.
Amend an intergovernmental agreement with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and the City of Tigard for transit police services.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye. Please read 931.
Amend an intergovernmental agreement with Tri-County Metropolitan Transportation District of Oregon and the City of Beaverton for transit police services.
Call the vote.
Adams.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Potter.
Aye.
Could we skip to this?
Okay. Mr. Seaton, the city attorney advised me that you should be allowed to state your issue on item 918. Would you like to come forward and state that?
This is 918.
Yes, please read it.
Amend contract with Preston Gates LLP for outside counsel assistance.
You state your name for the record.
Andrew Seaton. A couple of items. I believe this is the one that was when I came into the clerk's office downstairs. They're saying that the name of the company had changed on this, and it's referred to by two different names in here, I think. The law firm of in the top, in the title, it's called Preston Gates LLP, and then in section 1.2, it says it's referred to as K&L Gates LLP, and there was someone downstairs that was saying that it changed, the name had changed yet again. And the other question is if the charter and rules of the council, it says that, let's see here. Hold on. It says that items shouldn't be put on the consent agenda, any matter which will increase the appropriation unit's budget. And you are increasing the amount of an item that was appropriated from by $75,000, and as such, it should be not put on the agenda. And like I said earlier, there's a drafting, I believe it's a drafting error, which says in the now therefores in section B, if applicable provisions of the city code chapter 5.68 are waived, then it's actually city charter. And 5.68 is the professional and I forget the exact title. I didn't print it out here for you, but I looked it up online this morning. Basically the rules for getting professional services and competitive bidding and that sort of thing. And as I was pointing out earlier, it says that that you can't, city rules of the council, section, city code section 3.2.40, A.2 is that non-charter provisions adopted under this section may be suspended or repealed as provided in section 3.2.40.I.8, but charter provisions may not be suspended or repealed except by a vote of the people. So you can't just say I'm going to waive something that's in the charter. That can only be put up to a public vote. So those are my several objections to this, and the usual objection that you folks are spending $390,000 on services, legal services, which I'm sure need to be done and all of that, but there's no real talk about what is actually the services are provided for when the other pressing issues like the 10-year plan is to end homelessness needs money.
Okay. The city attorney's office wish to respond to this.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I do think that Mr. Seaton is correct that the name of the law firm did change. It was previously Preston Gates LLP, which is in the title, and the name of the law firm is now K&L Gates LLP. So the title should probably be amended to reflect the K&L Gates LLP. I believe that the reference is to City Code Chapter 5.68 intentionally and not to the charter, and does relate to professional services contracts. And I don't believe that the objection regarding this increase on the consent agenda is well-founded, but it's no longer on the consent agenda in any event, so that's no longer an issue. So I think the only thing that needs to happen is to correct the title to reflect the changed name of the law firm.
So do you take that back and bring it to council next week, or how does that work? Or can we amend it on the floor?
I think you can amend it on the floor. It's really just a typographical type error, drafting type error.
Does everybody have a copy of item 918, ordinance, meaning a contract? Mm-hmm. Anybody wish to make a motion? And what would be the wording of the motion?
Just to correct, to exchange, strike out Preston Gates Ellis LLP and substitute K&L Gates LLP in the title of the ordinance. It's correct in the substantive portion of the ordinance.
I'll be moved.
Second.
Call the vote.
This is the roll call on amending item 918.
That's correct.
Okay.
What's the amendment?
The title reads Preston Gates.
Oh, I'm sorry.
LLP.
That is the.
It should read K&L Gates LLP. It was moved by Commissioner Adams and seconded by Commissioner Saltzman.
Is this a Scrivener's error?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Please call the vote.
Adams?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Thank you for pointing that out. There are no time certains this week. We're going to move to the regular agenda. Please read item 948.
Declare it is the policy of the city that children who lack health care coverage in the city of Portland deserve basic health care coverage.
Mr. Mayor, I'm sorry. I believe you voted on the amendment, but you haven't yet voted on the ordinance 918.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll now vote on the ordinance. Please call the vote on ordinance 918.
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Potter?
Aye. Thank you. Okay. Did you read 948?
I did.
Okay. Commissioner Adams?
Thank you, Mayor and members of the City Council. As Mayor-elect, I've set out three goals for when I assume office. One is to reduce the 43% of eighth graders that drop out of school, do not go on to graduate from high school on time. Two, to increase the number of family wage jobs available to our citizens. Currently, 21% of Portlanders who work, in addition, factoring in the 5 to 10% that are unemployed, 21% of folks in the city of Portland who work try to subsist at poverty wages. And three, we have 1 million people slated to be moving to our region, and in many, many important ways, we're not ready. Item number 948 speaks directly to the first two of these goals. It is a resolution that as a city council, we are committing ourselves to providing the achievement of all of Portland's children to have access to basic health care by September 2009. Many of us have had experiences ourselves or have been through the experience of with friends and family of lack of health care and the miserable results that can come from a family that does not have access to basic health care, health insurance. For children, the youngest and most vulnerable members of society, lacking coverage for health care means they lack the access to services they need to become healthy and productive adults. We know that the health of a child affects his or her performance in school, and that performance in school sets up the stage for achievement or lack of achievement later in life. We know that the high human and social costs of uninsured kids comes from less preventative care, which results in unnecessarily high diagnosis of disease at more advanced stages later in life. Today we estimate that there are 12,000 school-age children in Portland without basic health care coverage. In Oregon, more than 91% of uninsured children have at least one working parent. So over 91% of uninsured children have at least one of their parents who work. These hardworking parents make a little too much, to qualify the Oregon Health Plan's government-subsidized care, yet with the average annual family health care premium of more than $11,000, unsubsidized health insurance remains out of reach for many working families. For these reasons, today we are saying, as a city council, that we will work with Multnomah County, the local school districts, and community leaders to find a solution for these kids and for these families. Ultimately, the best solution should come from the federal government or from the state. Certainly, if there was a way to secure health care access for all of Oregon's children, we would strongly support that plan. We have in the past as a city council, and we will again as in the future. And we hope today that this resolution sends a clear message of support to our state legislators, to our federal delegation, and to the governor of support for their health care initiatives. But if no action is taken on the federal or state levels, we will be ready with our own plan on how to improve health care coverage for Portland's uninsured children. I'd like to recognize Drs. Greg and Marcia Coodley and their team of Why Not Portland, and they'll have a chance to speak here in a few minutes, for helping direct our focus to the problem of uninsured children in Portland, and for the work they've done in their campaign for the Children's Health Care Plan. I'd also like to thank my fellow council members for supporting and co-sponsoring this resolution, and also some key staff. You're going to hear from Kimberly Snyder. Thank you. And Shannon Callahan. I don't know where she went. Thank you, Shannon. As well as Multnomah County Commissioner Jeff Kogan and Stanford Children for their work on creating this. So Kimberly's going to give a quick overview, mm-hmm. and then I know we've got a number of people that are on time constraints, and then we'll hear other testimony. Kimberly.
So good morning. My name is Kimberly. I work for Commissioner Adams, and I'm just going to give a brief overview of what this resolution does, what the process is. The resolution establishes a policy committee. There's a technical team that's a part of it that will be there to support and give technical advice to that committee. The Kids Care Committee is tasked with crafting a plan to secure kids' health coverage. The baseline discussion is that we'll be covering public school children and children 0 to 5, covering preventative care visits, and that the coverage will have a reasonable annual deductible, and that there will be coverage for prescription drugs. The committee's recommendations will include both health care coverage options and funding mechanisms, and they will report back to you by the end of this year with a plan that outlines steps that will need to be taken, intergovernmental agreements, reports back to council, and such. That will have the program ready to go by the 2009 school year. And finally, in the event that the state or the federal government does make a plan, then there's a provision in the resolution that halts this process. So I'm happy to take questions. And
do you want to mention briefly also we have a quick amendment?
Oh, we do. We'd like to amend, under the be it further resolved that Kids Care Committee shall use the following outline. The third is the coverage preventative care visits with a primary care nurse, a primary care physician should be licensed medical practitioner.
Kimberly, I have a question.
Sure.
If the state legislature adopts the Healthy Kids program.
Yes.
And presumably fully funds it, does that legislation take care of the target population that we'd otherwise be looking to?
I think it would. Yeah.
The refinement on that, I would say, is we'd be looking for any major gaps. So I think that this effort here in Portland has the added benefit of helping to ensure quality control in the state and federal level. But as it was proposed in the past, it would go a long ways towards the goals that we've outlined here.
In terms of public schools, it only covers children in public school. Does that include schools that are paid for with public money? I'm thinking I used to work in an organization called New Avenues for Youth, mm-hmm. For homeless kids, and that they have a high school there.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I think that's the intention.
Pardon?
I think that's the intention, yes.
And there's also the issue of charter schools.
And charter schools. Mm-hmm. So, but any